On today's Emerging Tech Horizons podcast, what's in the FY24 appropriations for science and technology? Hello and welcome to the Emerging Tech Horizons podcast. I'm Arun Serafin, the Executive Director of NDIA's Emerging Technologies Institute. Today's episode, we're going to talk about recent trends in the Department of Defense Science and Technology budget and look at the recent appropriations bill and budget requests. This past March, Congress passed its annual appropriations bill and the President signed it into law, which finalized DoD's fiscal year 2024 budget after several months of continuing resolutions. In the same month, the administration also unveiled its fiscal year 2025 budget request, which is now being digested by the Congress, both the Armed Services and the Appropriations Committees, as well as defense industry and the general public. All of this is supposed to lead to a National Defense Authorization Act and an appropriations bill, which again will turn that request into an actual budget. What does all of this mean for science and technology and the Pentagon's research and engineering enterprise? To join me in discussing that, my guests today are Jacob Wynn, one of ETI's associate research fellows, and Dr. Reed Skaggs, the Chief Strategy and Business Operations Officer for NDIA member Lewis Burke and Associates. Thank you guys for joining today on the podcast. So, Jacob, let's get into this conversation. Can you just level set for all of us? Tell us what happened with the 2024 appropriations.
Sure. So this is the first year of a two-year deal between the Biden White House and former Speaker McCarthy's Congress, in the deal called the Fiscal Responsibility Act. And under this deal, DoD growth was a bit restrained, but research, development, test, and evaluation grew by $8.6 billion to a total of $148 billion. And the overall science and technology appropriation came through at $21.5 billion on top of a around $17 billion request. So every organization got more than they requested, with the exception of DARPA, which went down from a $4.3 billion request to $4 billion.
So overall good for what we call modernization.
Right. Right. And then in addition to that, you had a lot of 6-4 prototyping money in the order of hundreds of millions of dollars
for things. 6-4 is the stuff that is after early stage research.
Right. After early, like you said. Yep. Early stage after early stage research, it's the slightly higher technology readiness level type things. So you have projects in missile defense, projects in future precision-guided munitions, and then engines as well that received large earmarks. And then there's some more specific earmarks that we'll get into.
So Reed, you're in the business of digesting all of this. Is there anything surprising that you saw come out of this appropriation bill?
Yes, I think there's two things. One, for the bill to come out in March is a little bit tricky if you're in the department, because now you've got a lot of money. You've got
to. When's it supposed to come out?
In a normal time, we would have appropriations passed on October 1st in the fall. So you're 6 months into a fiscal year.
That's not a normal time, right? That's a Schoolhouse Rock version of appropriations.
This is true. So usually around Christmas.
By October 1st.
Yes.
But usually it's Christmas.
Christmas.
But this is even later than usual.
That is right. We did not get any gifts for Christmas this year. Mm-hmm. But we did get some Easter goodies here as we got it into that point of the year. I think from our perspective, one of the things we saw is, you know, what Jacob mentioned, there are a number of what we'll call ads, congressional requests that were put into the bill.
And
Not earmarks, because that has a very specific connotation now, because there are community requests that are known as earmarks now, versus in the defense bill, they're just congressional increases.
What does that mean?
So, in
my mind, an earmark is when Congress adds money for a project, knows in their heads which one of their constituents is going to receive that money, and somehow the money gets to that constituent.
Yes, in that sense.
And that's still what goes on.
In that sense, this is, in that definition, yes, it is an earmark.
Okay.
But in the overall language now, since the Republicans 2 years ago officially brought back earmarks, they call those community request. And so they're not actually in the defense bill. They're in other bills like CGS. The science.
Civilian science.
Yep. You'll see them in MilCon. You'll see them in other places other than defense, because your definition of earmark is still occurring in the defense bill, where legislators are putting in specific requests into specific budget accounts that they intend specifically to go to whatever constituent asked for.
Okay. So that's still occurring in the Pentagon appropriation.
That is still occurring. And at this point in this bill, we see at a top level, at least in the S&T 616263, there's $1.6 billion worth of congressional increases in the bill. So that's a lot of money, as you would know, to push out the door between now and August, when contract shops will start to close in the department to try to get their books straight for the year, back to the schoolhouse rock time of October 1st.
So I don't understand that either. The budget request for science and technology was what?
It was $17.8 billion.
And the appropriation was?
21.5.
All right, Reed. So after hearing that, is there anything in here that really surprises you?
I shouldn't say it's a real surprise. It's more of, you know, the congressional intent in their bill is an increase of almost $4 to $5 billion, right? So that's a lot of money in my mind that has to get executed between now and August on top of the 18.
Put out the door on contract.
It's got to be out the door on contract, even though it's good for quote unquote 2 years, but you've got to get the money moving. So that's, some people could say challenging, some people could say opportunistic, depending on how you look at it.
Right. Then you have programs like ATFIT, which had requested $100 million.
What does that stand for?
The Accelerating Procurement for
Fielding Innovative Technologies,
long acronym. But that requests $100 million, received $300 million. And that's going to be hard to execute as well, because those are all supposed to be smaller grants, and they have to get more of them out the door.
I can think about this in that the department only asked for like $14 billion or so. It got $4 billion extra, which means Congress really likes science and technology. Innovation is important. More money for small businesses, innovative Silicon Valley guys, universities. But on the other hand, you're saying it's going to be a challenge for the department to get that money out the door.
It is going to be a challenge to get it out the door.
So would they rather not have the money?
No, you want the money.
Okay.
You want the opportunity every time, but it's almost like it's venture capital dollars, right? It's one-time money, and you hope to see it, you know, that you did something really good, and the department invests in you again, right? So they take it, the Congress has given them the ability to take some chance on some things, and if you do really well, then maybe you'll get an extended contract with the department. I think that's the whole hope here, because I think that's what the congressional people's constituents want, is a long-term relationship with the department.
And this is really compounded because of the lateness of the
report. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Right.
So it came out in March. In theory, it's supposed to come out in October.
Right.
When was the last time we see that Schoolhouse Rock style theory actually a reality?
It's been probably 15 years. Yeah, since it last came out
in October.
15, 20 years.
So all the gnashing of teeth about the lateness of appropriation is just something we've gotten used to over the years.
I think for the science community, we have, you know, and it doesn't really impact us. I think what it really impacts is the warfighter, the people at the front lines where they need to have supplies and things. And one thing you do notice in the last couple trends is both the administration and the Congress recognize that. And so they keep really putting a lot more money into operations and maintenance. So when we jump into the president's budget request downstream, RDT&E stays flat, but O&M keeps going up. And I think that's Congress trying to make up for this delayed in time, because the warfighter is the one who really counts at the end of the day.
But for the science and technology, the researchy accounts, it's kind of a drumbeat.
It affects it, but
not as drastic.
Right.
That's right.
There is an impact, though, when the request comes out and the request is based off of, you know, information that outdated information, because they don't know the actual appropriation that they're going to be able to spend. So they build their next year's budget and the out years based off of, you know, a bunch of money that they just didn't account for in the appropriation.
Right.
Right.
So it's hard to know what to ask for in the fiscal year 25 budget.
Right.
Unless you know what you have in the fiscal 24 budget. The thing I don't understand about that is it still takes the department 2 years to build a budget request, and they were never going to get that appropriation in that time frame. So I don't understand what they're complaining about that either, right? They take much longer to build a budget request it's not like they're sitting there waiting until October 1st to receive the appropriation, and then they start building the budget. So that complaining about, well, we didn't know, when would the appropriation have to come for them to really know?
Right. And the other thing is they also typically, for most money, have 2 years to spend it, right? The fiscal year 24 bill, they do have until the end of the 25 fiscal year in most cases to spend that money. So they do have time to figure out what the excess appropriation was and absorb that throughout the enterprise too.
So, the appropriations bill is available online. Mm-hmm. Hard to find, but it's available online. And it's got lots of numbers and tables in it. For the average university, member company, interested individual, how do they digest these tables?
They ask people to go back and check the bills. And you can, I mean, like it is, it, they are public record and you have to help guide them in the discrepancy between what a president's request looks like, which has PE numbers, and the appropriation bill, which has just the title. So you have to make sure that you're tracking between the two different systems and help them see that.
And in some of these tables, you're going to see long lists of individual projects that it looks like Congress is adding.
Right.
What are those?
Those are what you refer to as an earmark.
Because those are Congress choosing to try to help out a constituent and some money for a research project at State U or this business.
Correct.
Right.
And X million dollars goes to that project.
Correct. And now, in the meantime, our friends across the way at the Pentagon are building the 26 budget as we speak.
Right.
Right. So 24 has hit the street. We got to get that moving. 25 is being defended on the Hill, and 26 is being built in the building. So you've got three budget cycles that are going on simultaneously.
Right. And on Capitol Hill, they're reviewing a 25 request, and they're doing oversight over the 24 and 23 requests. So there's multiple fiscal years being reviewed on the Hill at all times as well.
Right. And it's not like there's three different people for three different budget years. There's one person who's got to keep all three budgets.
Right. So now when a member company or a university sees these tables of earmarks and they're not their earmark, or they see the sort of the president's budget request has been appropriated, how do they think about, well, is this a contract opportunity or not?
So for most folks, you need to build the relationship before you put something into a congressional bill with the department that you're going to work with. So it's not just Congress putting money into something and then, magically it shows up and somebody goes, hey, I've got $20 million, for time machines here today. It's more about you've already worked with the program managers and said, obviously your budget is constrained. If there was extra money given to you, would you want to work with us and partner with us in this opportunity? And so typically those organizations will build a proposal. The government has to compete that money. It's not, quote unquote, directly wired to the time machine company versus the government has to say, we have extra money for time machines. We would like to get proposals. And so they have to actually compete that to a certain degree.
But it's kind of wired.
It's kind of wired, I mean, at that point. But they have to go through the process of showing good faith of, I've got extra money. I've been directed with this extra money to do a very specific task. I have to find the performer to do that.
Right. But the bulk of the money, right, we said $14 billion out of the $18 billion is not wired in that way. But it might already be under contract.
$17
billion. $17 billion.
Yeah. Or if you're in the Air Force, all that $62 is already wired to the personnel. That's where they get paid out of.
Paying the people who work at the laboratory.
That's right.
Okay. So the process of turning these budget tables into actual business development contract opportunities, it's not so simple.
No.
Okay. No.
And I think the hardest part of the whole process is getting on contract. I think it's very, very challenging because one contract officer is not like the other.
Right.
And they all have personalities, they all have different quirks of how they want to make sure that they're obligating to either the DFARS or the OTA I don't even remember what DFAR stands for, but that's the book that you have to the rule book for contracting.
It's the Defense Acquisition Regulations
or whatever the vehicle. And so that takes a while to work through. And if you're a university or a small business that's never worked with the department, that is a very, very challenging task. They just don't know, understand. In fact, last week at the AI Expo, lots of the venture capitalists talked about, we now understand how the department works, how to get on contract, therefore we want to work with the department. 10 years ago, they said it was impossible to get on contract, and therefore it was just too hard, and they're like, I don't want to deal with that.
Right. And so these budget tables and the appropriations bills are just one step in that long.
Correct.
So it's a big document, and we all had a chance to look at it, so I wanted to challenge you guys. Is there anything surprising that you found in this large appropriations bill? I'll start. The thing that I found interesting and surprising was based on some of my work on the PPPE Commission, that I was really impressed the way the appropriations committees wrote in their language in this bill, that they understood the need for speed and that they were laying out the case that they're not actually the part of the process that's slowing down the movement of money to take advantage of interesting opportunities. They lay down in some pretty gruesome detail how long it takes for the department to request transfers of money between accounts to take advantage of opportunities, the fact that the department actually hasn't made use of all of the ability it has to transfer money, and that the Congress is very responsive to changes in what money is being spent on to keep up with technology and threat and consolidating programs when the department requests it. I found that very interesting. And I wonder if we're leading to this, almost this game where it's going to be the Pentagon and Congress trying to prove they're not the slow part of the process. What did you find interesting?
Right. So, and then on that point, the below threshold reprogramming amount for, everything, but I know for RDT&E went from $10 million to $15 million.
What is that?
That means that they're saying, in addition to everything that you just said, we're going to let programs move a little bit more money without having to come to us. So whatever...
Which means speed.
And then whatever the problem you were having was before, you know, hopefully it's a little bit alleviated now if it was a problem.
Remind me, what's the threshold that you have to add? If I'm the DASA R&T, the Assistant Secretary for Research in the Army, how much money do I... At what threshold do I have to ask Congress for permission?
It's $15 million now for most things, but in the RDT&E title, it's $15 million, or I believe someone can fact check me, 20% of the program, whichever is lower.
Okay, so if I'm the DASA R&T and I want to stop doing quantum science and I want to do more AI, I want to move $15 million out of my quantum line to my AI line.
You can do that.
I go to Congress and say...
No, you, above $15 million, you have to go to Congress.
So I want to...
Yeah.
...took the step of increasing those thresholds.
Okay.
Right.
And pointed out the department doesn't even take advantage of the flexibility.
Right. But they still made it more flexible. Right.
But if you're the DASA R&T, I'm going back to that. So why would I not want to maybe consolidate a couple programs with that threshold capability?
And the appropriators also said, we're okay with that, but here's the thing. It's Congress that actually appropriates the budget.
Right.
And it's Congress that needs visibility into what's in those budgets. And so as long as the department is transparent about what it plans to do, at least the language that the appropriators put into their bill seems like they're right to them.
Okay.
Right.
So there was some interesting language about DIU as well.
Right. So DIU had requested just over $100 million, received just about $1 billion. So it got some funding for 6.3. It asked for $100 million for that, received $200 million. For 6.4, it received an additional $130 million. And then the most interesting part was that there was this almost colorless budget activity 7 money, totaling $600 million for them to basically do what they need to do all across the services, and including $200 million for the combatant commands to really embed themselves and address their specific needs.
So in theory, this money could be used for both R&D and prototyping and even procurement of whatever results.
Right. It can be used for close to everything in that final pile.
I find DIU actually an interesting experiment in the sense that my understanding is, if I'll use the time machine example again, if I'm a PM or a PEO and I've got to field these things, what they try to go is find the commercial vendors that are doing, they're making these kind of activities. Maybe the department knows, maybe they don't. They get them on contract. And then they told the PM or the PEO, hey, I've got additional vendors here that can support your mission. And we basically got them on contract and we'll pay for them to come in. I don't know if that relationship has worked or not, but I think that's what they're trying to do in this situation. My contrast or my example here is if this bill really talks about, you know, near peer strategy, and one of those strategies is this thing called AUKUS, the Australian, US, and UK working together. There's only $25 million for that. And so I'm curious.
Is that more or less than the department?
It's the same. It's the same. But I'm curious. I think if we were to get into some type of near peer conflict, I think it's going to be a lot of work with allies that's going to be needed. And maybe the balance between what we're trying to harvest out of the commercial land. And I think the commercial land is really trying to harvest software. I think people say that we are the best at making software in the whole world. So how do you ingest those software capabilities into our weapon systems versus how do you work with your allies with the weapon systems you have and make them as good as possible?
Right.
So are we saying we wish Congress had added more for AUKUS beyond what the department requested?
Yes.
So we were against that.
No, I think we're for it.
I do think that part of the AUKUS agreement is that they're each going to spend some from their other buckets of money too, though, right? Because they're going, you know, for at least for hypersonics, say, you know, that's something we're doing in partnership with the Australians a bit. There's money outside the AUKUS line for that. And then I think somewhere down the line, there's going to be procurement partnerships as well as part of that. So I'm not sure what specifically that $25 million is for. I'm wondering if it's for like facilities.
It's supposed to be for, so there's pillar one and pillar two. Pillar one is about the submarine technologies, right? Mm-hmm. So that's
yep.
a very, that makes a lot of sense. Pillar two is all these emerging technologies. There could be quantum, there could be AI. What I don't see in there, and I think the lesson we're learning right now from things like in Europe, is how do we manufacture parts, energetics, weapons, et cetera, at a speed and pace that you're going to need if you're in a near peer conflict. I mean, to me, what we're seeing in Eastern Europe right now is kind of like preseason football. It's kind of fun. Nobody gets hurt. We're learning lessons. But when you get to the real thing in a real peer conflict, I mean, that's the Super Bowl. It's going to be on.
Right.
And you're going to have a lot of weapons very, very fast. And if you listen to the British, they'll say, well, if one of my ships goes down, I've got to take it all the way back to the UK to get serviced.
Right.
How's that going? I mean, that doesn't seem to me, you know, if we're going to be in a joint effort together.
Yeah, and right. then just as the bridge, there was another appropriation that came out after this big appropriation of the Pentagon's, we call it base budget, which was a supplemental appropriation that handled current events in Europe, in the Middle East.
Right.
Correct.
And those are handling some of the operational issues that we're talking about. And the truth is, there's not a lot of operational stuff right now going on in that AUKUS.
That is correct.
Right.
So that supplemental appropriation handles sort of day-to-day operational activities of the
right.
Pentagon, and then we see a new budget request coming.
Yeah, and then also before the new budget, you know, IBAS, the Industrial Base Analysis and Sustainment Program, that has grown since fiscal year 2022, I think, from $300 million up to just under $1 billion now. So that's a bit of a more long-term look at solving some of those constraints as
well. Do you think that's
well.
An artifact of what we saw during COVID when the department had to get engaged with the Defense Production Act to build the respirators, and then they start seeing all these supply chain issues?
It is.
That they put more money over there to help kind of yep. shore up the supply chain?
I think it is, and I think you see that because when you start looking at the individual congressional ads, in there, it's for very specific items that are being asked for on top of the IBAS base budget for its general work and activity. So I do think so, yeah.
So Congress is adding on top of what the department is requesting for this industrial base.
Right, so. Right.
Right, and the department just came out with this their first ever industrial base
study. Defense industrial strategy.
Yeah, and I think they're realizing this machine that was built after World War II is not going to keep up with what you're going to need in the 21st century.
Right.
Okay, and those supplemental appropriations don't usually go after those kinds of supply chain things. They're actually for buying stuff paying salaries.
That's right.
Maintenance of equipment, right?
That's right.
But it's nice to see Congress and the Pentagon try to take aim at some of these nagging supply chains.
Right. But even in the supplemental, more than you might expect is focused on, some of it is focused on actually building the capacity to rebuild the supply that the supplemental is giving through drawdowns. So they are focusing on it.
And the other thing that I think is interesting in the supplemental is that there's often very little science and technology.
Right, almost none.
And it's because these are supposed to be emergencies.
Correct. I will tell you that there's $98 million for the Department of Energy to look into isotope issues in Eastern Europe.
Right. And that's a research project.
It reads that way. We've done a little digging into it, and it looks like they're trying to get the right parts of their national lab systems to be able to understand if there's any types of materials that look a little funny over there, that they can identify them as being not normal.
Okay, so that might be more operational.
Yeah.
All right, so Reed, we got the appropriations bill signed into law, supplemental appropriations signed into law. This money's now going to, what's happening to it? It shows up at the Treasury or something? How does it find its way into the hands of your friendly neighborhood program?
So let's see, we're in May, so it should have gone through the Treasury now. It should be in the actual executor's pocketbooks now. So if
it goes from Treasury to Pentagon to Navy to some program manager.
Yeah, the budget office for each of the service gets the pot, and then they start divvying it out into, the ONRs, the NAVC centers, et cetera.
And then they can let the money now can flow through contracts.
Correct.
After competitions or through existing contracts out to dollars.
That is correct.
Out to performers. So time roughly between the day the president signs an appropriations bill to dollars start flowing into contracts is how many months?
At best, 6 weeks. At normal, 3 months.
3 months. Okay. So if you're a defense contractor or a university, that's got to be built into your business processes that you know there's going to be this plan.
You hope so. But if you're new to the game, they're like, why didn't the money show up in my Venmo account yesterday?
Right. The other thing, and Jacob, you touched on this, is that the appropriation bill signed into law. Same time, there's a lot of discussion about things called reprogrammings.
Right.
So what's a reprogramming do to all of those numbers we see in those tables?
So you will see a service or a defense-wide agency have the ability to take money that was allocated to it by the service or the comptroller and actually move it to someone else's pocketbook, so to speak. And then once they have that, into a different account.
Because with something came up, right?
Yes, because something came up. Maybe it could be the case that they thought a program could accelerate its pace and had an opportunity. It could be that the money or the plan for the money fell through. Or it could just be, like you had mentioned earlier, a change in priorities mid-year. And if it's below that number, they can actually give the money to someone else who's within that same account. And then they have to notify Congress that they've done so. But below that $15 million number, they have the ability to move things as they need.
So the appropriations bill, the budget's passed by the Congress, but there's still a lot of flux.
Right.
There's still some delay. They're still choosing who those actual contractors are, and the work is
right. Right. And there's also an increasing number of options that especially OSD has to use flexible money in new and interesting ways. Like I said, AppFit got $300 million. There's wide latitude in who they give that to, if they choose to partner with a PEO somewhere in one of the services. So they have the flexibility to remove stress as they go as well.
All right. With that, we're going to stop the conversation on the 24 budget appropriations process. Join us next time where we talk about the FY25 budget request and how this whole process is going to start all over again. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to highlight that ETI has got ongoing events all the time. Please check out our website and our YouTube site to see all our future and past events. We're very excited about our summer conference, the Emerging Technologies for Defense Conference and Exhibition, going to be held August 7th through 9th at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center. Speakers include Deputy Secretary Hicks, Undersecretary LaPlante, Undersecretary Hsu, Admiral Grady from the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and many others. To learn more, go to www.ndiatechexpo.org. Thanks for watching this first part with Reed Skaggs and Jacob Wynn, where we talked about the budget. Special thanks to Daniel Park and Melanie Yu for producing the podcast. Thanks again for listening to Emerging Tech Horizons.